Well, 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 it's an hour with our Pet Chat OGs today. The originals.
Wow. I'm liking that.
Yes.
Now, they're also our top Gs. First of all, Cheryl Shaw, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And Dr. David, who's back in between conferences and junkets away.
I thought, could we get through a show without mentioning junkets? Hello, everyone.
Cheryl, we have to start by looking at your brooch over there, which I haven't really done much of. Mm.
Is it a rabbit's foot?
It's some sort of claw.
It is. We're going to be talking about dew claws, and this is actually a lucky grouse. It's the foot of a grouse.
Not so lucky if it ended up on in a brooch.
Oh, well, he probably ended up on someone's dinner table plate to begin with, so, you know, I didn't do it.
I worry about your brooch collection.
This is a special one.
And there's a new one every week. She doesn't run out, does
I know.
Cheryl Shaw is here along with Dr. David. And good afternoon, Steve at Raymond Terrace. Your dog is scratching away. What's going on, Steve?
Yeah, hi, good afternoon to you all.
G'day, Steve.
About 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, there's been no change in behaviour, environment, anything else like that. He's a seven-year-old pug, and he seems to be starting to scratch around from his right paw to his right side of it, well, as much as he can reach, because he's about 15 kilos. But there's no dermatitis, there's no rash, there's nothing. And he goes for about six or seven scratches, and it vibrates on the floor. So when we're asleep, we can actually hear it vibrating, you know, with him doing it.
Mm.
So, and we've looked everywhere, say, as I said, for any skin issues or anything else like that, but we can't find anything.
So which part is he actually scratching at? Is it his face?
No, his abdomen with his rear right leg, with his right rear leg.
Oh, okay. All right.
About mid-abdomen.
Yep.
Lower part, yeah.
So is it only one side or both sides?
Yeah, only one side.
Okay. Well, sometimes, just going back to the more likely thing is that there is actually some inflammation in the skin, and some of the early signs, at least, or even late signs of dermatitis can be quite subtle, and this is related to a couple of things. One is the type of organisms that are sometimes involved. So yeast can be less prolific, I guess, in terms of the skin effect in those areas, or even some bacteria can have more or less obvious signs of, we call them comedones, where we get infected hair follicles, and they can just show up as little black dots.
Right.
So they're kind of like blackheads, but they're actually deeper, there will be a deeper infection. The other thing is, another factor is the level at which there can be inflammation or infection in the skin. So we talk about surface dermatitis or pyoderma, superficial. So surface is, as it says, on the surface. Superficial is in those first couple of layers of skin. Those things can be more obvious, but then we also get a deep pyoderma or dermatitis. Right. And those ones can be less so until they actually start to break out and can cause a lot more trouble. So it just depends if there's one of those factors going on. Now, are you using any sort of medicated shampoo or anything?
No, I haven't used anything different or anything. We're just thinking it might be, I don't know, as I said, we couldn't find anything, so there wasn't any point putting any creams or anything on, but he's just finding really disturbing with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, and he's starting to increase with it as well.
I would switch over and use a medicated shampoo. So that may be something like Meliceb, which contains an antibacterial and an antifungal component.
Right.
And we don't want to put any creams on the skin.
No.
But an antibacterial shampoo, like I said, the Meliceb is a good example. Probably twice a week, leave it on for 10 minutes, wash it off, dry the skin thoroughly afterwards. Now, the reason I'm saying that is at this stage we don't have a diagnosis, right? But it is easier just to start that and do it, and you'll probably see if that's the cause, you'll see a result within a week or two. And then we can start to worry about some other possible causes, which really the ones I would be thinking is something that's irritating the nerves in that area or anywhere, to be honest. It could just be a reflex. So there's a nerve irritation which can be causing that behaviour. And I'm going to throw out a really rare thing that can sometimes present this way, and that is epilepsy. So sometimes we can see dogs that have seizure disorders have, generally we tend to think of them as these grand mal or these complete seizures, which involve, you know, they collapse and their whole body shaking. But just like people, dogs can get partial seizures or focal seizures. So they can actually get a seizure reaction, which is an irritation in the brain that is causing their limb to start scratching at the belly.
So more
likely the bet is there's a skin problem.
Yeah, Steve, just on that skin problem, one of the things when you've got an overweight dog like that, sometimes they really can do with having, obviously, to lose a little bit of weight, which that can be hard. But the second thing is if you can grab a rubber curry comb and really give your dog a really good brush out, because if there's a lot of shedding hair, which there probably is in your dog, it will be holding on to moisture there, which can sometimes make dogs get that yeast infection, which will make them scratch. And if you're trying to use that rubber curry comb, it will stimulate that area as well, reduce that shedding hair. And if you're using, as David said, that shampoo, the Maliseb shampoo, it will certainly, if there's any Malassezia there, will help to combat that.
Right. All right. Well, thanks for that. We'll try that.
Yeah. No worries. Start there. And if you find it's still a problem in a week or two, then I'd say head off to the vet and I'll do a little bit more.
Best of luck with everything, Steve. And just a reminder, everybody, that heads that we put to air today in the draw for that $50 voucher at Dozer and Co. Good afternoon, Kerry at Raymond Terrace. Your dog is barking at pretty much everything there, Kerry.
Absolutely everything. He suffers from separation anxiety, which he is being medicated for at the moment, just started it. Mm-hmm. He absolutely barks at a leaf going past the front door. He also has this habit of when a visitor comes to the door, he jumps all over them, runs and jumps at them in excitement. It's not aggressive or anything. We've tried a few things. We've tried putting him on his leash when somebody comes, and once they've sat down, we let him off, and he still runs and jumps at them. He doesn't listen. I thought he might have had a hearing problem, but apparently, no, his hearing's quite fine. He's just a miniature Dachshund with his own attitude.
Mm. How old is your little one?
2 years old.
2 years old. Is he de-sexed?
No.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you've had a fair bit of conversations about this previously, because you've mentioned a couple of things, like the medication for separation anxiety and the fact that you've got him, tried him on a leash when somebody comes. And I'm just wondering, first of all, with like the leash, for instance, did he get to the point where he was able to let someone come in, or did he jump around when he's on the leash?
He still jumps around. He jumps around trying to get to them.
Yeah.
It's just an excitement thing, just wanting to say hello. But like I said, he takes a running jump. And actually, I have a friend who has a bad knee, and he's actually jumped at her, and consequently she's in a fair bit of pain now.
That's the thing about a lot of these behaviours, is they can look kind of innocuous on their own, but actually once you start to put them into a family environment or into a household environment, they can end up causing, you know, you can get people trip over or fall or get scratched. And so these sort of injuries are fairly significant. The interesting thing to me is, like, when he's on the leash, that he was jumping around, and I think it's worth just sitting on that for a second. The reason that we want the dogs on the leash is to, stop the behaviour, as in they can't run over and jump on someone. But there's a more important point, and that's an opportunity for us to do some behaviour training with them. So if all they're doing is just jumping around when he's on the leash, then we're missing the opportunity to get his attention, to get him to sit. Even if it's, you know, for treats is a huge motivator, and a two-year-old mini Dachshund is probably going to be pretty keen on some treats. So that we can get them to understand, because the thing is, what you're doing is you're saying, just stay calm. That's very good. Here's a treat. You're calm. Mm. And after a while, they start to realise, not saying in one visit, but after a while, they realise when somebody comes to the door, my job is to go and stand over there. And maybe if you have a mat that they're regularly trained to go and stand on, I'll stand over there and I'll be quiet and you'll give me a treat and I won't jump on anybody. And so it's the training part that we need to keep pushing into. And that can be difficult because if it's, you know, infrequent or only, it sounds like I think you need to do some of this training when there's nobody around.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's an important thing. So just on the separation anxiety quickly, how long have we been on the medication for?
I had him at the vet last week. He's only been on it. He's on half a tablet a day. He's been on it for 4 days now.
And the separation from whom or what?
It's just when I live with my grandson, and when we both go out of the house.
Yes.
I was away a couple of weeks ago and my grandson went to work, and when he came home, the dog had actually ripped the curtains down off it in the lounge room, had gone in and chewed the sheets on his bed.
Because that medication is also going to help with a lot of this training. It sounds like you're very much in the early stages of that.
Yes.
And I think that if we can get back to the idea that the purpose of the leash is to stop the jumping, but more importantly, it's for you to be doing the training with him. So, and that's going to require a fair bit of time. It's going to require one-on-one coaching with either the vet or a veterinary behaviourist. So that you can actually get to an end point where the goal is when someone comes to the door, he sits on the mat, you give him a treat and he's happy to stay there. And unfortunately, it's not an easy fix. So,
okay, best of luck. Thank you very much. Best of luck with everything, Kerry. Tina at Madawi, your puppy has got some struggles getting into the car. A bit anxious there, Tina.
Yeah, I think she is a bit anxious. All boxes are anxious, I think. Once I get her in the car, I even put a nappy on her, but she still wheezes. She settles down, but she wheezes in the car, and I find that a bit off. As soon as I say car, the brakes go on, I'm not getting in there.
How old is your dog?
She's 11 months.
11 months. Yeah. Okay.
I need to get her to the vet, so I can't.
Yeah, for not, sure.
Yeah.
One of the ways that we often approach behaviour problems, which psychological or psychiatric behaviour, we'll just put them all in the same basket. One of the ways we do is we want to break down all of the steps. So in this case, it's getting in the car and going to the vet.
Yep.
Look, first of all, as a shortcut, you might want to investigate whether the vet can come to you. But in regards to the behaviour, as you said, it's pretty awful. And it displays a degree of anxiety, and we don't want dogs to be suffering with anxiety. So we want to break down the behaviour into all of these different stages. And as you said, even if you mention the car, that's going to cause anxiety. So we have to just go very slowly and just think, okay, today I want to just simply walk out to the garage. That's it. Or maybe just put her on a lead, but instead of going for a walk, if she's happy about that, we'll take her to the front gate or to the garage and then stop, give a treat, turn around, come back inside off the lead so that you then move a little bit further along and a little bit further along. So she goes to the point where she stands next to the car and she's calm.
Yeah, she runs around in the shed. She runs around the car, it's fine. If the doors are open, fine, but as soon as I say we're going...
Right. So then if you can get her to that point where she's fine, and running around can actually be a sign of anxiety, but if you can get her to the point where she's fine and then, you know, you say, OK, we're going to go, what the next step is, reversing 2 feet, then driving forward 2 feet.
OK.
OK, so that's it. Stop. End of lesson. And she goes back inside. So that gradually then you kind of reverse, okay, well, we'll reverse onto the road and then back into the yard, or we'll reverse and then we'll park out the front. You can see it's pretty problematic because there's a lot of steps involved.
Yep.
But it's the only way, and particularly for an 11-month-old dog, you're probably going to find you'll get fast results. It's not like an 11-year-old dog.
Yeah.
And then further to that, some dogs we will medicate, and we discussed that with Kerry just prior.
Yep. I was listening.
The medication is designed not to fix the problem. The medication is designed to make it easier to train the dog.
Yeah, well, I'd rather not put her on anything. I'd rather do that by training. If that doesn't work, then I'll think about medication.
Don't discount it too quickly, because if we focus on the fact that the medication helps to give you the space to do the training, you may find you never actually get there without the medication.
Okay. I know there's a spray that you can get to put to give the dog a calm feeling.
Yeah.
Dap. In the car, I meant. Would you advise that?
Yeah, I would use it in the house first.
Okay.
Because I want to know that they're calm in the house. Otherwise, they go to the car and suddenly the car smells a bit weird.
Right.
And then that's more reason not to go in the car. So if you have it in the house, then when they go to the car, they're like, oh, this is just like my bedroom.
All right, best of luck with everything. Your bedroom smells like a spray, David, does it?
Oh, we can't smell it.
Yeah, Lynx Africa,
dogs
perhaps.
Can smell
it. All right, thanks, Tina. Best of luck. And we've got another one for you. Good afternoon, Tracy from Whitebridge. What's going on with your two dogs, Tracy?
Well, I lost my older dog 4 weeks this Friday, and I was never really able to take my other dog. She's not that aggressive, but she would be aggressive to other dogs, but now she's not. I'm just wondering if that because she's no longer protective of the older dog.
Mm. I'm sorry to hear that, Tracy.
Yeah,
how old was your other dog who passed?
16 years and 7 months, or 8 months, yeah.
Wow, wow.
He was a rescue.
Well, he did well.
Yeah, he
to
was
land
amazing,
with you. So what about your other dog now that you've got? Is it just the one, just the younger dog now?
Yeah, she's a rescue as well.
How old's she?
She's 8 or 9,
yep.
I think. Yep. But I always had to be really careful of her around other dogs.
What breed would you say that she is almost likely?
She's a bit of everything. I'm sure she has Doberman.
Yeah, so a bigger dog. Okay.
Yeah, she's a bigger dog. She's quite tall.
And did you say she was more aggressive before, but she's not now?
No, and I freak out if I take her out and we come across another dog.
Yeah.
But now she's a little less aggressive, she is, and I'm wondering if that's something that I should look forward to.
Well, as you said, I mean, it's only been 4 weeks, so you've noticed this behaviour change. Look, I think it's hard to say, isn't it, really, what might be the contributing factors. Certainly, if without knowing their behaviour entirely before, between them, whenever there's two dogs together, there is the risk of conflict, or at least there's the risk of potential conflict.
Well, they were very close, and I'm thinking that she, if we went out in public and she could be aggressive, I think she was protecting him.
Sure.
And now I think she doesn't have to protect him. She's being her real self.
I think any of us as dog owners need to be aware that our dogs can, bite, or they can be aggressive under certain circumstances. So I would always be cautious. And I think if you're in a state of flux where you're not sure what her behaviour may be with others, then I think you do need to exhibit caution. Obviously, you've had this event.
Still keep her on a lead.
Oh, absolutely.
all of that. Yeah,
definitely. And even to the extent, if other people are going to ask you a question, oh, is she good with other dogs? I think that's where you need to be cautious and say, look, we're not really sure. She's in the past has not been great with other dogs. So let's just, how about you keep your dog on a leash over there and I'll keep my dog on a leash over here. And then, look, time will make a big difference for you and for her. And hopefully her new behaviours start to settle in, and that's what she wants to do with the rest of her time.
Pet Chat on 2NURFM 103.7. Dr. David Tabbert and Cheryl Shaw. And for the last week, this is our last week of doing this, everyone that goes to air is in the draw for a $50 voucher to spend at Dozer & Co. So who knows, that could be you. In the meanwhile, Cheryl, your topic today, dewclaws.
Dewclaws, yes. So for those who don't know what dewclaws are, they're
in that category.
You don't know?
No clue. When you were prefacing everything you're going to mention today, I'm like, I've got no clue about any of this.
Okay.
So I'm listening.
So dewclaws are found on a lot of animals, but I obviously see them on dogs regularly. And they're found on cats, they're found on birds, like I'm wearing my brooch today. They're even found on cows, David.
They're found on horses.
As well?
Yes. Not common, but yes.
Yeah. And even some reptiles. But why I want to talk about it, lately I've been seeing so many dogs coming in with the dewclaw grown into the pad. Now, yes. The thing with that is it is so painful.
Ouch.
Yeah. Mm. And because our dogs can't really tell us, sometimes you might notice it because the dog's licking on its paw, but you really need to be checking those feet, checking those dewclaws. Because the dewclaw is up above the foot and on sort of on the side of the leg there, it doesn't strike the ground. And it's sort of a rudimentary thing now for most animals. It doesn't serve a great purpose, whereas it used to, but these days things have altered. But what happens is that nail, because it's not being attended to, it's not wearing down, it will continue to grow and grow. Now, if we don't cut it, what will happen? It'll pierce into the skin and possibly cause infection, but the pain is one of those things that we need to be really mindful about. Now, some of these dewclaws are removed when puppies are born. Sometimes the breeders will remove the dewclaws, you know, between 3 and 5 days. And they do that because the nervous system isn't really developed so fully then. But a lot of times you buy a dog or a puppy and it has dewclaws. Sometimes vets will take them off if they warrant removing. And, you know, there's a couple of stories with that. Sometimes, and when you look at working breed dogs, they never take the dewclaws from a working breed dog because they tend to go lame and things happen to them a lot more because when there's that disturbance on the ligaments and things, they don't have that that torque is altered on their movement. So, you know, always have the conversation with your vet. But from a groomer's perspective, if you've got a dog with a really dangly dewclaw, they're the ones that sometimes that the groomers are going to get accidentally cut because often hair, say in a spoodle or a cocker spaniel, something like that, the hair can often get matted around that dewclaw and create a problem. So when the dog is being clipped and that dewclaw is really tiny inside that mat, then there can be an accident and no one wants that to happen. So often at desexing time, if you've got a dog with a dewclaw, have a discussion with your veterinarian whether it's worth having that one removed or not, because it's easier while they're doing one anaesthetic to take that.
Mm-hmm.
But David, I did see that in one of the articles on dewclaw removal that you have to be over 18 or a vet to remove dewclaws. That's in the veterinary's charter.
That seems reasonable.
Yes, doesn't it? I thought, wow, reading this, that was interesting.
Did it need to be said? Obviously.
Oh, I think so. It must have. But yeah, dewclaws, do check them. Make sure that they're not hurting the dog and get them clipped down.
Absolutely. Oh. And further to your point, so there are a number of breeds of cats and the breed escapes me now where they can actually have extra dewclaws known as polydactyly.
That's it. And they're really popular, those cats.
Oh, goodness.
They call them the lucky cat. That's what they're actually called, the lucky cat.
Because they've got an extra dewclaw.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And there's even a dog. There's a dog in the Norwegian, what are those birds, pullens?
Well, not grouse, because I think you've got the grouse foot.
I've got the grouse.
There was only
the puffin dog, that's what it is. Do you know the puffin dog?
Yes.
They have six toes. So they have three pointing forward and two pointing inward.
Well, that's freaky.
And that's because they climb up really,
steep
cliffs, and they can climb up because they can use their legs going outwards, and they can actually put their legs right out, unlike other dogs.
You know I'm going to Google this,
Cheryl.
And
you have to also Google the fact that their heads are different as well. They can push their head right back. Other dogs can't do that. So you can almost put their occiput back on there.
I'll tell you what, this is fascinating stuff. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
I'm learning all the time.
Norwegian Longhound, that's what it's called.
All right. We've learned a bit today.
The puffin dog.
And still a bit more to come. Pet Chat continuing here at 2NURFM. Last couple of minutes to go. Last caller coming through. G'day, Yvonne. And your 14-year-old toy poodle has got some problems. What's happening with you, Yvonne?
Yes, Mark. What is happening, she has warts all over her, and I did have one surgically removed when it first came up, but now she's covered in them, and they're like a cauliflower-type weepy thing. And, look, I can't get anyone to groom her because of, I think it's a virus. I'm not sure.
No, you're absolutely correct. It is a virus. It's a papillomavirus. Now, warts, they're exactly the same as in people. Now, there are the same appearance, I should say. There are actually species-specific. So there's human papillomavirus, there's canine. Cows get lots of warts as well, so we do see bovine papillomavirus. And obviously they can cause problems with the coat. Sometimes those ones that are really cauliflower kind of, they actually will... if they get knocked, they bleed, they can get infected. Generally, if they don't do any of those things, they usually don't cause a problem, except, as you said, when you go to get a groomed, you can't because it could be nicked, or B, nobody wants the risk of spreading it over to other animals.
Exactly right. So she may have got it from when I took her to the groomers beforehand. I'm not sure. But she has had one surgically removed. That was the first one. But now she's covered in them. And I think she's just too old for anaesthetic.
Yeah, there are and it's a little bit well outside my field of endeavour. But having worked with veterinary dermatologists, in the past, I have seen... and I've seen this in cows too, where they actually take some of a papilloma, a wart off an animal, mince it up, suspend it in saline, and then they inject it. I'm not saying go and do this. It's got to be actually supervised, etc. But to promote an immune response, kind of like a mini vaccine, if you like. And one of the reasons for that is that, first of all, I'm not sure that always works. I have heard people say it works, but then again, they come and go for no reason. And the reason why we think it doesn't work is because we're taking the papillomavirus, which what it does is it changes the connection between cells in the surface layer of the skin and proliferates those cells, okay? So this surface layer is well outside the realm of the bloodstream immune system. Okay, and generally when we talk about the bloodstream immune system, we're talking about immunoglobulins. Immunoglobulin G is the most common one as an antibody. But when we talk about surface of skin or eyes or mouth or something like that, we're talking about IgA. So they're different classes, and so we're just not sure whether... using the papillomavirus or the wart as a vaccine, does it create a reaction? Well, maybe it doesn't because the immune system can't get to it. And that's why surgery becomes the treatment of choice, which, as you said, is a bit problematic when you've got, 50 of them and you take them off and they all come back.
Exactly. I didn't know if they could be cauterized or I can give her something for her immune system that would help.
Nothing that really will help the immune system except general good health, plenty of rest, proper nutrition.
She does.
Okay, all of those things. And otherwise, it's can they be cauterized or otherwise? Look, it's worth having a chat to the vet. I have seen people do that with superficial ones And that could be enough. But ultimately, I think she's going to have those until she passes away. Whether it's one or 50 of them, that might be up to whatever you can do with the whatever the vet says. So, it's worth a conversation.
Thank you so much for that, Yvonne. Look, we've run smack bang out of time, gang, so we need to illuminate the winner on who they may be. What's the $50 voucher for Dozer & Co?
Dozer & Co. So Kerry at Raymond Terrace with her dachshund.
Good on you, Kerry. $50 to spend there is on the way. Of course, there is a dog or the cat of the week. No time for all of that. They're on our website. Find the pets at Pet Chat page and find the new member of your family. Dr. David Tabrett and Cheryl Shaw, always a pleasure for you both. Our Pet Chat OGs, our top G's as well.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Another Pet Chat on the way next week. 2NUR FM 103.7.